I'd like to call the April 1st meeting of the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee to order. Roll call, please.
Sure. Chair Hewitt?
Here.
Deputy Chair Walz?
Here.
Legislator Donaldson?
Here.
Legislator Green?
Here.
Legislator Lips? Legislator Nolan?
Here.
And Legislator Stewart?
Here.
Thank you very much. A reminding on meeting structure, priority is given to committee members for discussions and questions. Resolution sponsors are also given priority. Chair's discretion to open to non-members and the public. Can I have approval of the March 4th and March 10th meeting minutes? Is there any discussion on the minutes of March 4th or March 10th?
I'll make that motion.
Do I have a second?
Both.
There's Nolan and then Donaldson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Minutes approved. We'll be going slightly out of order today. We're going to do the reports first. We have a couple people who have to leave early. We'll start with the leachate loophole with Rebecca Martin. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi.
You can come to the city.
That's when we're doing the reports?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody has a handout.
I printed
them.
Thank you. You're welcome. No problem.
I really appreciate it.
And they're on the OneDrive.
We have about 10 minutes. Okay.
Good. All right. So I'm actually here today for two matters, if I may. There's the leachate loophole and the packaging reduction recycling bill.
Do that?
Just to inform you, because I'm working on leachate loophole independently, but I'm also working with Judith Banks Beyond Plastics. It's a full plate, it's a part-time. So I don't know if you've all had time to look through the materials that I sent. There are two actions that I'm hoping you'll consider. So for the leachate loophole, I'll start last from the last point, which is we're looking to get bodies to write letters to the DEC to ask that they open a rulemaking for on-site treatment and disposal of leachate at landfills. They've been talking about a rulemaking, which is just regulations, new regulations on how they're treating leachate at landfills. And we want them to, they started talking about it in 2023 and every year since, and the process hasn't opened. So we're looking for support to get the BEC to open rulemaking for on-site treatment and disposal of leachate at landfills in a 90-day public comment period, so that we can do a good, robust public outreach for good comments. So before I launch in, since I have limited time, are you all familiar with the leachate loophole, or should I start from a certain place, or do you just want to ask questions?
I'm not sure about the rest of the committee in terms of background on the leachate loophole. I feel confident to move forward on that. But you mentioned letters, but we have in front of us for today a resolution that would be in support.
It's a memorializing resolution.
It's a memorializing resolution, which is usually considered to be stronger than a sign-on letter.
Yes.
So
it's not a sign-on letter. I wanted the legislature to consider that, actually. That's terrific.
Yeah. So the resolution is a stronger form than a letter from the legislature.
Thank and we you. Also have a circulating letter about packaging reduction that we have about six sign-ons already.
Perfect.
Yes, it went around last week.
So the packaging reduction is a letter that you're getting signatures for?
Yes.
Yeah, whoever supports it?
Yes.
And then the resolution is for the full body?
Right.
In other words,
yes.
That's great. I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah. We listen to you.
Well,
thank
you. That's nice.
And just since I was speaking, let me say that on the packaging reduction, I will be abstaining from that because I'm doing active advocacy for Cathco Mountain Keeper and other groups on that issue. So I won't do any advocacy through this role.
Okay. Thanks for that, Kathy.
And I was at a presentation recently that Rebecca put on about the leachate loophole. And so I think many of us know about it because I brought it up at one of our recent meetings. So describe the packet and let us know how else we can help besides memorializing.
I'll tell you, we just did statewide data. We just did, we dove into it and looked at all the active landfills in the state. And it's 671 million gallons a year from 2019 to 2023. We looked at it again. 40% of it is going into Class A and Class A special streams, drinking water in the state, mainly the Niagara River, for example. That's a major part of a drinking water system. But I mean, it's happening in the Hudson too, which in the segment that it's in is Class A as well. But we're going to be doing a big press conference on this new data, and I'll keep you posted. I'd love for you to come to learn about that. So again, trying to get the state to move forward so we can all engage, see what they're recommending, and then make better regulations, hopefully.
Yes, legislative agree.
Yeah, just basically it's that the water treatment facilities, which is where all this methane was going, weren't designed for what we know now. You know, I just want to be sure that it's not anyone's fault. I think that the way things evolved, I don't like the idea of having to fill up tanks and move it to a treatment facility. I think if it can be adequately treated on site, but when the facilities were built, they weren't designed for what we now know is in the water, especially the water that we made in landfill.
I think it's a service for us to stop calling sewage treatment plants. This is one of the things that I've learned along the way. Wastewater treatment plants, because it gives an impression. I think even before I started this work, I assumed that when leach aid would go to a sewage treatment plant, it's because it was treating it, and it's not. Or at least we know it's not built to do that. And I think more testing needs to be done to kind of get a sense. In the city of Kingston, and I know the town of Hurley has been in a bind, but it sounds like Supervisor Bombs is moving forward with an engineering firm that actually has mobile treatment. Just, you know, I haven't seen it. I'm hoping to visit him and see what that process is. But they're looking for mobile units, and the city of Kingston is doing some tests right now. I mean, I'm not sure. I did check in with the mayor the other day to see if they had the results yet, because I'm very curious, and also to learn the methodology of testing.
Legislator Stewart, you have a question?
Well, I was just kind of going to follow up on that point. Legislator Collins and I represent Berkeley.
Yeah.
And I know that at one point that the city of Kingston had said that they were no longer going to accept their shipments.
Yeah.
And then they were looking at other alternatives.
Right.
And both of those alternatives would involve hauling this stuff a long way, including as far as New Jersey. And so it was kind of looking at the same situation that we're dealing with solid waste, shipping it all the way to
Seneca Meadows.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping to avoid a situation like that. And I know that, the costs that the city, the municipality of Hurley was looking at was potentially quite high.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had a chance to speak with Mr. Bombs since I returned I spoke with him last week, but I haven't spoken to him yet this week. And, it was my understanding that the city of Kingston was again accepting those. No.
I mean, they're in the process of doing testing. They're having their, they are testing their effluent right now. They tested Hurley's. They've actually done all four landfills, Jockey Hill, the two other ones, Hurley. I don't think they've gotten the results back.
Right.
New Paltz, Ulster, Hurley, Jockey Hill. So they've not gotten those results back. So at this moment, Hurley basically shut their tank. I mean, that's their solution, is like they're not transporting their leachate anywhere, as far as I'm aware. And so, I think we need to avoid that. We are trying to be proactive and look at what will happen when the results come back. It's about $400,000 to bring a year to lease a mobile site for one landfill. So something that would handle New Paltz, for instance, will cost us about $400,000 just to lease. So we have two landfills, it's about $400,000. That just treats it for the 1,4-dioxane and the PFAS. We then spend the exact same amount of money we were to dispose of it in Kingston or whatever, but it's removed those. The one thing, you know, that I think people should consider is there's new regulations being put in place for the wastewater treatment plants, especially if they're going to be sending effluent into a drinking source, that they have to be below a certain threshold. And so if we start to say, okay, at every single source you have to treat, and then they have to treat because they're not only receiving leachate, they're receiving other wastewaters. And they already have to treat the wastewater for, I know they haven't had to up until now, but the new regulations will require them to. It just seems like it makes sense to have one solution. And you know, if that means UCRA has to partner with the city and the town of Hurley partners with the city to figure out a treatment facility for these chemicals, then we need to figure that out. There is, you know, roughly, so we manage and maintain the two inactive landfills, right? There is somewhere in the 20s around, and a lot of them aren't collecting any leachate. They weren't lined. UCRA operated New Paltz and the town of Ulster for 3 years. So going back to 1955, the town of New Paltz and the town of Ulster were accepting in whatever waste they were accepting in. The PFAS were coming in then. We operated them for 3 years. We're on the hook for ever to maintain and operate them. I just think whatever you're signing on to, ensure that there's, if the state's going to do a rulemaking process, which I'm not against and we're already looking at, there should be some sort of funding or something set aside to help the municipalities and agencies like UCRA do this. Because again, we had nothing to do with the 50 years of PFAS that were put into the soil.
Can I say something? So that's right. And I think what Tamana's point, that the municipalities have been doing what the state has allowed them to do for many decades. So it's not the municipalities are in a bind, and we certainly don't want to be sending our waste across state lines to other unassuming right. communities. That's not a solution. The solutions are new, and I think if we could put our minds to it, this is the first time people are really seeing the big picture. So it's scary, and I think that the regulations need to address what Mark is saying, but we need to see what the DEC is proposing. And I, you know, there's all kinds of it'll be interesting to see what that is and for us all to work together to make sure those points are made during the process. So
we still don't really know what the DEC is actually proposing. So we could be looking at multiple of these treatment facilities around the county, or we would be looking at like one central treatment facility that everyone would bring their stuff in. I mean, or we just don't know yet.
We don't know yet, but there is some people know. And I think that there are some discussions about actually, from my understanding, that very thing.
Right.
I mean, there's so many it's, you know, once we have clarity.
We could be having this problem at 20 places.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the purpose of the resolution, is to initiate the rulemaking process.
That way
to,
you can see.
Exactly.
And we'll finish up, and then I'll stop. But just to say that.
There'd be one centralized filter.
So I don't have the solution right now. None of us do, but we want to see what the DEC is proposing. And, you know, we do have a coalition of partners that's growing with some incredible organizations like Just Zero, Great Engineering Minds, you know, who have been advocating for all sorts of things, dealing with sludge. And so I think that we have an opportunity to try to get to start the ball rolling for good solutions, but it's not going to be a silver bullet.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a lot of work and prioritizing and focus on this
problem. Well, I was really glad to see in one of the warehouse clauses that the goal was to shift cost burdens away from municipalities and back to the polluters.
Yes.
Because based on what I saw with the town of Hurley, I mean, that could be a real burden to our municipalities.
Yeah, they should pay.
That wasn't
they should pay. And I think
the polluters should.
Yeah.
I think one more comment from Legislator Nolan, but this is the memorializing resolution.
Thank you so much, everybody. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your work on this.
Yeah, I guess I want to harken back to the UCRRA director's comment of if we can design the system the way we want it, what would it be? And I think that the thrust of this resolution is towards on-site treatment at the landfill, which has some major benefits. And landfills may need to take responsibility because of what they accept. You know, they have a structure for accepting things. I do also take the point that when you get to the wastewater treatment plant, if you've only asked the landfill to address their leachate, you may have that wastewater treatment plant accepting things from other sources that haven't had that same degree of analysis and been filtered or whatever our understanding is of the process that's going to address the leachate, the toxins in the leachate. So I'm not settled on whether or not you need to have landfill leachate as a part of this system. Even if you're collecting it in a big way, it seems to me like getting the landfill to deal with its stuff right up front might be good.
Yeah, you don't want to let it leave the landfill because it's more complicated to filter once the cat's out of the bag. And
So
landfills are no longer operational.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a very large benefit there, and I don't think we should be thinking in either or terms. I think we may need to be thinking in both and terms. But each time you do that, then you potentially magnify cost because this is not inexpensive to identify compounds and then remove them, and then you still have to deal with them. So this is the beginning of a process where we take better care of our waste, which I thoroughly endorse.
Yes, and I think that's the bottom line.
I also am a little concerned about pushing the DEC to go forward. Well, you know, they've had 2 years already, but before they have done that on their own. But it is a signal from the public that we want to be involved in this conversation and want to have a mechanism for these other groups, including engineers, who, you know, this is something that might benefit greatly from an engineering solution coming forward.
It sounds like the beginning of a lot of work that we have to do together. So
yeah.
we'll be in touch.
Thank you very much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your time. Thank everybody.
Good work. Excellent.
Thanks,
work.
Ma'am. Thank you.
Mr. Tom Conrad, would you like to come to the table? How are you?
Great. Thanks for putting me up on the agenda.
Yep, pleasure.
Yeah. So I didn't have a presentation put together for the recommendations from the REAP group. I mean, they're right there, but I'm happy to explain or go into deeper detail on why any of those recommendations are there.
I believe you and Matt shared the report with the whole committee, and if you'd like to highlight some of the findings, that would be great.
Okay. So the REAP group was charged with putting together a plan for reaching the CLCPA goal, which has also been endorsed with Ulster County, 70% renewable electricity by 2030. We decided that meant renewable electricity locally generated compared to our local usage. We had to decide something. Our initial assessment of where we stood means that we're optimistically on track for hitting somewhere in the 40% level by 2030 at the current rate, which is actually kind of in line with where the state is. So given that massively far fall short of there, we moved on to recommendations we think could accelerate closer to that. We've been working heavily with towns on solar mapping in the hopes of finding projects, which could be accelerated. The group is focused in on one example project, which hopefully would be a pilot. It's a group of projects that could be interconnected at the same time. One of the biggest barriers we identified to the problem is the interconnection issue, which the reason it's becoming now a large problem is simply we were using resources that had been developed for other use. You know, the grid had some capacity for interconnection that was built, even though it was built for the purpose of load. However, if we are to get to 70% renewables, most of which will be solar because that is the cheapest available local resource, barring hydro, which is extremely hard to develop new. The variability of solar required leads to the fact that the peak output has to be much higher than the average because the average capacity factor for solar is below 30%. So that means the peak output at the peak has got to be at least three times the average output. The grid, on the other hand, also peaks, but at different times, and it was built so that peak has to be below current demand. So if you put those two things together, current grid could only potentially get to 25 to 30% renewable without being upgraded. Once you get to 70, you have to have actual grid built for that. While Central Hudson does have a mandate to meet the CLCPA goal, they currently interpret their other mandates to say they should only do grid upgrades for expected demand, which, as I just went through, means you will not hit 70 by 30 or 70 by any time, really, unless someone else is paying for those upgrades. Currently those upgrades are made by the developers, which actually is not necessarily the barrier to getting 70 by 30, who pays for it. But unless you plan it proactively, which the developers as individual projects can't, you certainly can't do it on a quick timeline. So we're trying one method with that group of projects in New Paltz, where they're working together to plan, but that is only a pilot. It's not, when we're looking at the scale of how much renewable energy needs to be built, it's a rounding error on how much that would do extra. It's an example for why that might work. So other methods we need to do structural changes would be one, and a lot of these things aren't county things can do, but we want to ask the regulators like the PSC to tell the Central Hudson that indeed that mandate should be funded. In the end, renewable energy will lowers costs as a cheaper form of energy for constituents. And we pay for all our energy either through the grid upgrade or through the energy costs. So who pays for it doesn't actually make that much difference in the final builds, but planning does. There are other things that will make interconnection and other issues work better. There are a large number of new technologies out there that, again, Central Hudson has decided are not necessary to meet demand, and so they're not looking at them. We think that there actually should be a state process for approving new grid technologies that can make all this cheaper. There are also better methods of managing both supply and demand that could use our current grid better and allow more solar to interconnect. High on that list would be flexible interconnection, which has been it's currently being tried in a few utilities around the country. It serves actually the state of the art in Texas, which is you allow the solar or any other like a demand also to interconnect, even if the grid can't handle it 8760 hours a year. And you just say, okay, during those 5 or 10 hours where the grid can't handle it, you have to curtail. There's a lot of potential for greatly increasing the amount of solar can interconnect at lower cost if we do that. I didn't organize my speech, so let's stop there for questions. There's a long more listing there in that direction.
Yeah, thank you for this. And it seems to me that you pointed towards Central Hudson in a couple of places. And so some of that is internal to that organization, but some of it is what the state, the PSR, requires them to do.
And the interpretation between the two, it's in some ways it's incentives that and how those are interpreted, because it's a adjudicated, semi-adjudicated process.
So my question would be, sitting, you know, around this table, would we be, to address Central Hudson, where are the pressure points? And I'd value your opinion or your opinion speaking on behalf of the working group about taking over for Central Hudson in some way, whether that should be a priority for us as legislators and for Ulster County. And then the other elements that you talked about, that pushing for the new technologies that Central Hudson is currently saying no to, pushing for flexible interconnects, which Central Hudson is, and I guess the state is currently saying no to. Which of these things are there that we could focus on? Should we work on all of them? What's your recommendation to us to try to push out of this point, which feels like a more detailed understanding than I had 4 or 5 years ago, but not a different understanding.
Right. So we did break out the recommendations by legislature. A lot of, sort of the simplest thing we'd like to come out of this is actually sort of endorsing the bill and passing that on as recommendations to the next higher level up. It was good you asked my opinion versus the group's opinion, because there is one point where we sort of have a disagreement. The group did not endorse the Hudson Valley Power Authority Act, which the county has endorsed. I personally would endorse it. The group didn't. The reason we didn't is we are making progress, as I was saying, in like the New Paltz corridor and at those productions, and we think potentially might be counterproductive. I do think that a lot of these problems we see are due to incentives on how Central Hudson, as an investor-owned utility, their goal is to make money for investors as long as they can keep the PSC happy. So their incentive is more to comply sort of in a passive-aggressive manner. You know, we could get them to do any one of these things. The problem is the effort involved to getting them to do the one thing is here. I do think the PSC could be doing more. I don't think outside the HVPA there's a lot we can do. There are some things we can do in terms of also working with our towns in terms of permitting. I did put some recommendations in there, and I think agrivoltaics are one of the problems I didn't talk about, which is real, is NIMBYism, people not wanting them in the backyards. I think agrivoltaics have a lot of potential there to change that conversation, in that which is solar co-located with farming. And I mean, I can speaking for Marble Town, my Marble Town hat. When we wrote our solar law, didn't even consider agrivoltaics. We have a nice provision in there that says you can't put solar on the best farmland. Which, if that's the only thing that goes there, I think I still like that provision, but did not consider agrivoltaics. And I think encouraging agrivoltaics, supporting pilot projects like that, I think will really work well on the NIMBYism side. The county, too, actually can also move forward on this pilot project we're working on. I mean, the county is part of this because sort of the anchor tenant there is indeed the county's new operations center with government operations center. So just guidance that when you're developing that, also leaving open the potential for developing the nearby as sort of a group upgrade of the grid. Because there's currently capacity, if I recall correctly, like in between 1 and 2 megawatts of capacity of existing upgrade, but all the identified projects are 5 or 7 megawatts. I don't, Mana may know the numbers better than I do.
Well, Mana, you're on my speaking list. You can...
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I think that it turns out we didn't know how this would evolve, but the work that we're doing with New Paltz on that corridor from the high school to the landfill is an important pilot for how to work with the utilities who typically kind of do their own thing and let the municipalities deal with what they have decided rather than a collaborative iterative and it's process. And it's pointing out those very difficulties that need to be overcome. How is it going to be financed? Is cost share 2.0 going to work? I think one of the things that's really important is that the governor has not let me just use the word pushed the agencies to the relevant agencies to, for example, PSC, to get the utilities engaged and to work with the municipalities in terms of grid upgrades. So those are some of the things that we're discovering. I want to say that if we can work through that process, that's like 20 megawatts potentially of renewable energy. And I also want to put in a word for battery storage, including if anything should be a microgrid, that facility should be able to island off and still function in the event of an emergency. And we could go on, but I think one of the things that we should do perhaps at the next meeting, because you have a long agenda tonight, is come back with a focus of what order we should address the recommendations and, you know, recommendations, very specific recommendations to the committee in terms of actions.
Great.
But I do think the time has been well spent and well invested. Quite frankly, most of us support the idea of a public utility, but Central Hudson is the utility. Climate change isn't waiting, and projects are evolving, so we are actively working with them. And if they should become a public utility, what we've learned will still be of great value. That's all I want to say at this point, because I know we do have a long agenda tonight.
Great.
You think we can get a list of the recommendations more succinctly and how we can take action on? I can work with you over the next month.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could sort of pare it down
to like, okay, what can Ulster County act on? You know, and try to get it down to 5 or something.
I just wanted to thank Tom for coming. Tom and I served under Tom. We started work in public service at the same time, basically. And he has been chairing the Marbletown ECC for, oh my gosh, 10 years, 12 years?
Found some place where I worked pretty well. Stay there.
So thank you for all your work. And I actually served on the town board when Marbletown created their solar energy law. And I was glad to hear you bring up the agrivoltaics, because I think that's something that's really exciting. And I think that would be a really great project for us to work on and maybe putting together. a pilot project along its lines. So I hope to be able to work with you on that.
We'll be in touch soon.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Director Ryder?
I'm just going to sit here, if that's okay. I'll be brief. So we're moving forward with Rick planning. We're still negotiating with the seller. But we're also, just so the committee is aware, continuing to look at other buildings, other sites, in case the negotiations don't fully go through. We're optimistic, but the town has raised a couple of issues with traffic and other things, and we're trying to be good neighbors there and work through their process, which may or may not mean that the site that was selected is where we move forward on. But there's other options, so we continue, and I still think we can probably have something up and running by the end of the fourth quarter this year. So we have our first, and actually I have some handouts, but we have our first household hazardous waste. If you all want to pass those around and either, you know, keep them for yourself, or if there's a place in your districts that you think, you know, take a couple if there's enough. So what I passed around is our hazardous household waste events. The first one is April 5th in New Paltz. So that's this week. We still do have appointments available. You have to go online and fill those out.
Paint.
We do take paint.
There.
Yeah. We have paint care set up, and this is a free event. A lot more details when you register. This Saturday is also our first e-waste collection for the year. So we now go every Saturday from 8 to 2 at our Ulster Kingston location. TVs, other e-waste items we accept for free. So you can bring those in. Again, that's Saturday, 8 to 2 now, every Saturday now till November.
Do you take air conditioners too, or is that separate for them?
That's separate. You would just drop those off at the transfer station. We separate them. And then we have a company that comes in, evacuates the Freon, and then we sell it for scrap. So that would just be part of the, you know, you got to pay the $20 minimum. I think there's a fee on top there for any Freon, any white assault. So I'm just going to give you a quick update on our tonnages so far this year for MSW and C&D combined. January, we did 9,966 tons, and February, 8,415. Those are both off of our budgeted numbers. We're slightly slower. I mean, February is obviously a shorter month, so you would expect some fall off, although probably not 1,500 tons. It was a cold month, and weather wasn't great. We're used to being slower in January, February, but these were, again, off of our target number, so we'll see how the rest of the year makes up. March was trending slower, and then we had somebody doing a big deconstruction project, or demolition, really, project that brought in significant amount of C&D waste and helped knock that up. That's all I have for updates. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we ever consider it a good thing if the amount of waste is down? Is it
possible? If it's either being diverted or people just weren't using it, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Fair enough, but let's watch the trends. You know, we've been asking people to create less waste.
In future years, we're going to be targeting fewer tons, and the goal is to divert, you know, some, but also just really get out there with outreach and try to, you know, the first thing people should be doing is reducing their waste.
Legislator Walz?
In the RIC model, somebody has like the Habitat for Humanity store, restore. You have doors and windows that are good, and so you're going to not put them in the landfill, and you bring them to the RIC
Will they be given, like somebody just can, like, can go grab them, or are they going to?
They'll be sold.
They're going to be sold.
Yeah. So that the our model of the RIC is going to have a couple of different outlets because we really talk about it as both, you know, spoke, hub, but then spoke. So spoke, hub, and spoke. So the first spoke to those MRDCs, they're the town transfer stations as collection sites, and then things get brought to the hub if they're not used locally and taken over a short amount of time. So then you have the hub. But the hub also goes out to other spokes in, we don't want to recreate the wheel. We know there's the Habitat Restore. We know there's People's Place. So if there's goods that the operator can either wholesale or consign or even just give to these in order so it, A, gets distributed, and B, stays out of landfill, then that's the end goal. There will be a retail on site for some of these materials. And really what you're talking about, the building materials, Habitat has some, but they really are focused on furniture and other things. And they do have some building materials, but that will be like sales to contractors, because we'll be hiring somebody to denail lumber and you know, refurbish things and really architectural doors, bringing it back to life. So a lot of that will be sold on site, but mainly to contractors, not necessarily. Not that a homeowner couldn't come in and pick out a cool door. I just don't think that's going to be our common client. Thank you.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, I think one of them, in addition to refurbishing and keeping things in the economy rather than paying to send it to a landfill somewhere else, but I think C&D recycling, the ability to do C&D recycling is going to divert a significant amount of waste. And that's one of the reasons I'm as supportive as I am of this proposal, which hopefully we can finalize in May. But I have wanted to propose mandatory C&D recycling. That's something that would go to the Recycling Oversight Committee. But I didn't want to do it until we had a facility in the county that could manage it. We could send it to Orange County to Taylor, but it seems to me that local self-reliance is an important principle. So,
yeah. I just need to clarify that, like, because, again, this is permits to the DC and others. The RIC is not intended to be a recycling, a C&D recycling processing facility. That's not in any of the things that we've put out. It's not, we do not plan on processing recycle, you know, we're not going to be tearing apart sheetrock and recycling gypsum on site. That's a whole different facility that you're talking about. We may separate out, and again, it for C&D, it's really reuse. We may add our facility separate out C&D for recycling, but it would be sent to Taylor or other processors, unless, you know, on site where we already have our permit, we're looking at bringing in a separator for the gypsum board and all that. That's another option that we're looking at in the future. It just is not going to happen on site at the RIC, because that's a whole.
That was not clear when I took the tour, and I appreciate your clarifying, but I do think that it's an important part of the waste stream to focus on, and my understanding was that was why that facility was ideal, was that it was going to include C&D recycling, or managing C&D, but
building material.
I would suggest that if it's not actually going to be managed there, that it be kept separate and go to Taylor. We need to. 20 years ago, we went from 4% to 40%. We need to take that 40% to 80%, and that's what the state is requiring. And C&D is an important component, especially removing sheetrock, because that's what creates the hydrogen sulfide odor at landfills. It's one of the primary things. But
I think once we start creating deconstruction laws, we'll be able to handle C&D better. But right now in the reuse innovation center study, it shows about 14 different materials like bicycles, doors, things that are in good shape that don't require a ton of deconstruction. Legislator Stewart.
On that same topic, I currently am working on a resolution with Vicky and Nana to do just that, to do deconstruction instead of demolition. I did have a quick question for Director Ryder. So you will be saving lumber, for example.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not all construction materials that you won't be dealing with, but it is lumber and it's windows.
You will be dealing with building materials.
Yes.
For reuse.
Yes.
But we will not be, recycling is a whole different thing. If you want to recycle sheetrock, for one, you're only recycling virgin sheetrock, meaning it doesn't have paint on it.
Right.
Because Taylor doesn't, and I just met with them a month ago, they're not recycling, once you put a layer of paint on it, they can't recycle it anymore. So, but basically, if you're recycling sheetrock, you're peeling the board, and then you're taking the gypsum, and you're processing that gypsum, which is powder, off-site and used for something else. That's totally different than reuse. That's a recycling process.
Thank you for clarifying.
And we plan on involving that in our operations in the future with different things, maybe not processing on-site, but separating out C&D. Better if it's deconstructed, so that we can separate out the new sheetrock and recycle it.
Right. But lumber, windows,
doors.
Okay.
Yes, I don't know.
Yeah. Quick question on that: is there a separate permitting that would be necessary to do that recycle? That's what, and we have not included any notion that we would be seeking that permitting at present.
I've talked to the DEC and they're on board with us doing the REC in reuse. It would require a grant or permit for.
Vicky, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I'm a little confused because Mark, and excuse me, but I'm a little bit not as educated as everybody else. But do you have a specific business plan for this, Rick?
We do. Okay. We have a 30-plus slide deck. It's available on our website.
Okay, because I'm thinking that, you know, if there's a specific business plan, then everybody would be able to go back to that business plan and get some of their questions answered. You know, because you have organizations lined up that will take certain things.
We have a robust plan.
I've read completely, but I don't like to ask people if they've read it. So
okay. Well, I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
and it's information, I would say. So the part of our questioning is, you know, how does this piece go forward, and did I understand it correctly? Do I even remember it correctly?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think we're trying to do refinements on our understanding.
So let me ask just one more question. When do you plan on bonding for the property and for the REC?
I think that's going to take us in a different direction. But any other questions for Director Ryder? Sorry, Vicky, we can get to that after this meeting. We have a long night, and we have a meeting after this also. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Director Ryder. We're on to resolutions. Resolution number 81, confirming appointment to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. Chair Criswell has appointed Mike Baden to the Ulster Resource Recovery.
Nominated
Mike Baden to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency from present through December 31st, 2027.
Third, whereas says, oh, wait, that's the chair. I'm sorry, I read that wrong.
I stand corrected. Thank you.
We're sitting here. We nominated all that.
Yes, that's
yes.
right.
Yes, we nominated. He appointed. We're confirming the appointment.
Any other questions?
I'm clear enough to move this resolution.
I just want to point out that he did chair the UCRA Reform Committee and was able to create a consensus document, which we now need to implement, and we're going to be working on getting that information to, particularly about expanding the UCRA board to the our state legislators.
Wonderful.
With the former town supervisor as well.
Yeah.
We had wonderful applicants, and I'm excited that we're expanding the board. Do I have a second? We have a first on the table?
No, second.
Donaldson? Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm in favor. Opposed? Abstained? Resolution passes. Resolution number 82, confirming appointment to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency of James Gordon from present through December 31st, 2027.
Second.
Green and then Nolan. Any questions? Discussion? All those in favor?
All right.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Resolution passes.
Can I just also, I just want to thank David Gilmore. Done a great job and really been an asset. And maybe when the board is expanded, he might come back. He really has been an asset. Thank you.
I agree.
Thank you. I agree. I think that passed already, right?
Thank you.
For the vote.
Okay,
please. Resolution number 125. Declaring Ulster County's intent to act as lead agency under the New York State Environmental Quality Review Act for adoption of the Ulster County Agricultural and Farmland Protection Plan, Department of Planning.
Happy to move it.
Do I have a second?
Yes.
Green.
Is this the time that we would ask to be added as a sponsor or a co-sponsor, or would it have to be before?
I believe you could still do it now.
Pardon?
You can do it now.
Okay,
added.
I would like.
Added.
Yeah, me too. That's a good idea.
Green and Nolan added as co-sponsor.
Oh, and I'll add my name to the
list. Hey, me too.
The legislator Litz isn't here to make it the whole committee, but and legislator Walls hasn't opted in, but
yeah, I'm good. I'm in. Okay. The whole committee except for Litz, because he's not out.
He may get a chance at the next level of review.
Okay. We have a first. We have a second. Nolan and Green. All those in favor?
Right. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Resolution number 126, urging the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to initiate the rulemaking process and establish new regulations under 6 NYCRR, parts 360 and 363, for the on-site treatment and disposal of landfill leachate. Go to motion.
So moved.
Go to second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? This resolution packet. So, do it in the dollar
sheet. Mm-hmm.
Resolution number 127, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 entered into by the county, Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District, Department of Environment, Department of Planning. Do I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Did we want to have discussion?
Yeah, we'll have a discussion. Once I have a second.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. Questions, discussion? Legislator Nolan.
So this is a position that we've been talking about for quite a while. The coordinator for initially one watershed plan in Ulster County and now envisioned as three watersheds that would be coordinated. I think that though there are some things, I think, to still be worked out, this general framework is actually pretty close to where we need to be, I think. I understand there's a desire to have more stakeholders have input into this, and I think we can do that. But I've become convinced that we should go ahead and move this forward. One reason for that is that this contract envisions a particular collaboration between the county and the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District. I think that having a concrete proposal to put before the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District Board is really important to getting the question answered, is this going to be the right collaboration? And in talking with various parties, I don't see what we're going to change until we know what the answer is on this. There have been conversations to try to, you know, bring the two parties together. I do have one question that I would like answered on this before, you know, throwing my full weight behind this. But it's, to me, it's largely there. And I can ask that question now or get other general level considerations from the committee.
Legislator Stewart, would you like to speak before hearing the question?
Yeah, I would like to speak to this. So first of all, I found it a little confusing in that it doesn't name the coordinator position specifically in the resolution. At least I can see that. And I think that it might be prudent to put in that this funding is for the watershed coordinator and also the person. And this position would be, you know, whoever fills this position would deal with watershed, working with the watershed groups around the county, but also implementing the Lower Resopus stream management plan. And the fact that I didn't see either one of those spelled out in the resolution, I found a little concerned.
Did you see the little box here? It doesn't say the title, but it says coordination and implementation of those three plans, including Lower Resopus.
Perfect. So, but, yeah, I just didn't see it in the title, so that threw me off. This is something, this watershed coordinator position is something that I have been advocating for ever since I joined the legislature. And so I was really, you know, excited to see that, you know, this, you know, appears to actually, you know, be coming together. You know, initially we had looked at putting this in various groups. At one time I was working with Deputy Executive Laval to perhaps house this at the Hudson River Watershed Alliance, a nonprofit group. And then when that wasn't going to work out, then we had talked about perhaps housing it at the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. And, you know, none of those ideas were really moving forward. And so then when this came up as the planning department project, I was thrilled because suddenly, you know, it's like the dam broke and it seemed like things were moving forward. And I've had discussions with folks about that there were some concerns that soil and water might be very stressed to handle this position. I've had conversations, you know, saying how the bandwidth isn't there and that soil and water has other obligations, like $3.9 million worth of projects. And there was just some concerns expressed to me that, you know, this was going to be very problematic for soil and water to take off. And I just wanted to be sure that we're all on the same page. And there were also some concerns expressed to me that, you know, this, while soil and water is headquartered in Highland, that this position would actually be housed here in the county office building. And there was some concerns expressed to me about, you know, having that situation as being difficult to train and bringing this person on board. And so I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page and that people are happy with how this is moving forward, because like I said, this is something that I am thrilled to see come about. And so I just wanted to see where we stand in these negotiations currently.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah. So in terms of Legislator Stewart's first point, this is a contract with the district, and it's anticipated in the so the contract, it would be signed by the district, not by a separate watershed coordinator. But it's
included. The district, I'm sorry, does that mean by their board or?
Yes. So the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District is a separate entity, and that would be the entity that is envisioned in this contract as the partner with Ulster County. And the contract specifies that it's the expectation that a watershed coordinator would be hired with these funds. So currently, as it's written, it wouldn't necessarily have to hire such a person. But the benefit of the contract to the district is to hire such a person, because a lot of this work would otherwise come to the district without the district having a staff person to handle it. So I see that as the benefit. But your question ties in with my question, which is we have an overall budget for $100,000, and the narrative of the Schedule A it's the purchase of a vehicle anticipated that the district would purchase the vehicle. And so I'm wondering where that is in the budget. Is it part of project implementation?
Direct expenses by nature.
Sure. Direct expenses.
Part of the direct expenses. Yeah. So, and it's a lease, not a purchase, because that was discussion with the district about this.
Okay.
It's in the contract.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just didn't read the contract to out that way. So of that $11,000, it's unspecified how much of that would then go towards the lease of this vehicle.
We didn't want to get into that level of detail, but they're entitled to the bill against a percentage of the direct expenses against a percentage of it. And the contract, I mean, the interesting thing is same page. I think we're on the same chapter. We're not necessarily in the same page here, but we're at least reading from the same book. And now we're on the same chapter. Now we have to get down to the same page, I think.
Oh, I see it. It's in a note to that chart that I was reading, that direct expenses include the
We've also had discussions, since the district is a component part of Ulster County, we've had some discussions with the controller's office, and we're prepared to advance 25% of this contract to the district up front, so they have cash in hand, so they're not out of pocket with any cash. In terms of bringing the physician on board and doing the necessary things they have to do to get the vehicle repaired.
Thank you.
Could I ask another question for the planning director?
Is that okay, Legislator Green?
Thank you. Could you address Legislator Stewart's bringing up the location for the coordinator? And I'll just say that I'm aware of it, being the liaison from the legislature to the Soil and Water Conservation District, that the district has been presented with the fact that changes at the state level are going to, require is the right word, the space that the district is currently using to accept up to 5 or 6 additional staff people.
It's up to 7.
7. So in a space that I would say is adequate for the current staff, not spacious for the current staff. So the district is being faced with that need to accommodate, because we leased the building at a very, very favorable terms from the New York State NRCS. So So I like to just make the county aware that as we're negotiating this, that is a stressor for the district. But also my understanding is there may be some coordination that can go on that makes that too kind of turn to be potentially helpful for the district instead of just an additional burden. But certainly they would not be able to have a person in this role in that space because priority goes to the NRCS.
Can I say one thing? We got our engineering support pulled recently from the NRCS. So our whole slew of projects that we had engineering support that was agreed upon, that was rescinded recently. So our workloads got up about 25% because of doing in-house designs, working with a professional engineer. So we're doing a lot of that work in-house to save money in preparation for a professional engineer to stamp. That's a requirement. So over the last 3 months, a lot of things have changed dramatically, and it seems to be week to week things happening. So we're okay since we're a field office, we're boots on the ground, but a lot of partnership is being strained because of what's going on. So, you know, we have a good relationship with NRCS, but again, we feel very pressed now because it's like, well, we're going to help you with this irrigation system. Next week, the following week, it's like, nope, you're on your own. We're under a lot of stress now.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, I just, I want to be sure that there is coordination. I know that Cornell is doing some watershed work, and I also want to express a concern that for all the wonderful work she's done, Europa McGovern is moving on from Department of Environment, and essentially there are some experienced staff members, but there are also several very new people, and I just want to be sure that the watershed work is well coordinated. We've been asking for help with renewable energy work, and in the past we had asked for help with coordinating climate solutions with the schools, and our Department of Environment has been under a lot of pressure and very strained, and I know you experienced that as well, but I just really want to put in a word for the importance of coordinating. I absolutely support someone to focus on watershed, and I share a concern that I've heard that the office is actually not located in the watersheds that are needing that attention and that coordination, Lower East Elpis Roundup, et cetera. So just a word of in favor of really good coordination.
Deputy Executive LaValle, I'm wondering, speaking of coordination, now that we have an arts, culture, and open spaces director, do you see this watershed position dovetailing with that position at all? And if we had a parks department, would we be able to handle such positions?
It's a loaded question.
Yeah.
We can go one at a time.
No, to the latter. And to the first question, there's some pretty big differences in scope, in plans, in technical kind of expertise in matters. So I think it's they may both in some level be coordinating, but it's pretty disparate.
One of the places that discussions about where to cite this person and function was the Department of Environment. But our sense was that this position is not directly the Department of Environment's type of work. So I think, yes, coordinating with, but there's an acknowledgement in placing this somewhere else and actually answering to planning that there's a broader level that this position would encompass. And, you know, I appreciate that individuals or organizations within the watershed might hope to have the physical siting of this position in the watershed. But I would say in 2025, where the person's office is is not necessarily where that person is going to be. And if there were an organization or individual who wanted to offer comparable space at a comparable price, which from either the Soil and Water District or from the county was going to be $0 of rent, then I think that would be fine. And, you know, that could be changed very quickly. The district ended up not being able to make that offer of rent-free office space. But I believe that's, I mean, there's no budget line in here for rent for this office. And yet, because Ulster County is offering to find space and provide it. So that's a matching element, if you will, of the budget here, that anybody who would like to have this position in the watershed, I just bring forward a comparable match, and I'm ready to bring that resolution to move the office to wherever wherever we can do that. It would have a benefit potentially in less travel from New Paltz, where the district's office is, to Kingston. But I anticipate that this position will be traveling from Kingston, not only to New Paltz, but to all the sites in the county that we have potential projects. And by bringing these three watersheds together, I see the position as much more coordinating and management from a higher level than I had originally anticipated this might be able to be done. There's still a call here to implement projects in these, stream management programs, but I think there's going to be a lot of work in the first year of how to do that, and that would count towards the deliverable, because no one person is going to be able to go out and implement three watershed implementation plans. And the management that the district does right now out of the New Paltz office, most of that millions of dollars of management is of the Ashokan Watershed Stream Management Plan, which has a staff of more than five people,
but
five or six.
District is soon to be five.
So the Soil and Water Conservation District already manages an offsite program with a staff of five. This would be an offsite program with a staff of one, but with the potential to grow, because you could see that each of these watersheds might benefit from having a designated person, but we don't have funding for that at present. So this is a seed that I think we're planting.
Legislator Stewart.
I just had a question for Director Riedemeyer. In that, has your board voted on this yet, or?
No, we're still in contract negotiation with planning. And, Dennis and I, and we go back over 20 years, so it's a lot of back and forth.
We beat heads together. Right. They were in the same chapter, but not the same page.
Right. I was already wearing a football helmet. But, my goal is really, I really want to help out the county. I mean, we're a caring professional district. But my goal is I need to protect the district, too, by being overextended. So, we've had a lot of things that were unanticipated because of a lot of changes, and I have a whole litany of projects listed out, so you'll see where we're coming from. But we don't want to, we're doing a lot of in-house engineering. We're on the hook for at least 9 agricultural projects. We're onboarding a stream project manager position with our new contract. We're closing out a $12.2 million contract now. And then we're entering into a $17.1 million contract now by the DEP. If we didn't have the DEP, they're good partners. We've done a lot of good work. But that was a very burdensome contract. And right now I'm covering two positions, my position and the project manager. So a lot of times when I'm trying to work with Dennis, I have to do it after hours because I'm literally contractually obligated with the DEP. I mean, I get calls all the time like, I need this in an hour. Okay. So I just want to keep us in good standing with all our project partners. That's New York State Ag and Markets, DEP, the county. But I don't want to be where we were 3 years ago, where we were facing potential legal litigation for not meeting our current contractual obligations.
So would your board have to wait until the contract is signed to sound off on it, or?
Yeah, so how we do things is that with all contracts is that, like right now with Dennis or DEP, we'll go back and forth. All right, we have good terms. So then we give it to the county attorney. County attorney gives the green light, then it goes in front of the board, then the board votes on it. And that's how we've historically done things. And, with certain things, like when we entered into our successor contract, it was a lot of back and forth.
and we were able to reach an agreement, and then we wanted, you know, legal advice, like, does this look good to you? Because I'm not a lawyer. Then the board approves it.
I could just add to that, as a member of the board through the legislature having two seats on that board, myself and Legislator Litz, the board discuss this and ask the executive director to go forward to negotiate some sticking points. And that's the negotiation that Director Doyle.
Up on the sticking points.
So, so the question that I think is going to come before the board is, does this contract as presented address those points in sufficient, you know, in a sufficient way to say, yes, we're there and to go ahead. And that's why I say that I don't think continuing to knock heads for another month is going to do it. I think at some point you say, the county is saying, this is what we're prepared to offer, and the district has, the executive director brings that back to the district board and says, this is what I was able to negotiate, and he gives his opinion of whether that'll work for him, and then the board decides whether it'll work for the district.
I mean, one thing I have to say is that when you initiated the ARPA program, and we've literally, thanks to ARPA and thanks to the state, we've literally increased our agricultural workload fourfold with one additional staff member. And to me, that's something to be proud of. So, you know, how we develop programs is based on need, you know. So we're already obligated, but, you know, we tripled our soil health program. Our ag projects, we usually do two major ag projects a year. Now we're doing eight, some small, some large. And we're doing irrigation projects, electrification projects, and we're all over the map. So what I'm concerned about is the staff have given me feedback like, well, if we assist with this position, then we're going to neglect our other responsibilities. Like, what do you want us to do? And I don't want to be in a situation where we're in a contract with the landowner to do work, and then we ignore them, and then we have set deadlines. Like, it has to be December 31st. We have to get at least eight projects done. It's a lot. So that's where I'm coming from, and I've been conveying that. So I want to work with everybody, but sometimes you just have to say no, because if you don't say no, you're going to get spread too thin, and then it's going to make everybody look bad. People will suffer.
So if we reach the point where Soil and Water were to say no, does the county have a backup plan in place?
So the short answer is that we always had backup plans in place. The longer answer is that it's extremely advantageous, and in my opinion, to essentially work with the Soil and Water Conservation District. And the goal here is to do no harm to the district. So we've offered an enormous amount of collaboration between the district staff and the planning department, the Department of Environment, in order to move this forward. And we're thinking about this in long term. We're not thinking about today, we're really busy. We're thinking about what do we do to essentially grow capacity within the district to deal with water conservation issues. And I think this is the best way to do it, and we're doing it with 50% of this work being established on the Lower Esopus and 50% in the other areas. We have to be a trusted partner to the district, and I think given our ongoing efforts working with the district and the legislature, which also has a contract with the district, that we can be a trusted partner. So one is to convincing Jake that we are trusted partners, and two is convincing the board that we can move forward in some way, shape, or form, recognizing the district's stress as it exists right now.
And if I may follow up, and how important is it to get this resolution passed promptly?
So one of the things that you need to realize is we also have responsibilities back to the Hudson River Foundation, which is responsible for 50% of this funding. We have a contract with them. We're in the process of negotiating that contract with them in terms of what we're doing with the watershed coordinator. You're also in the process of releasing a request for funding opportunities out to those folks on the Lower Esopus with the end of May and June coming forward. So the longer it takes to essentially put somebody in place to go out, talk to those individuals and say,
this is what we're doing, the less likely we're going to get successful projects or the projects that we want until in terms of this effort right now. And that's only the first year. Then there's another $300,000 or $400,000 the next year. You're going into CFA season right now, which is the state projects. So you're going into situations where you're going to have opportunities to submit water quality grants under those projects, under those things as well. So all of this sort of comes together. The longer we wait, the less opportunity, the more opportunity we waste.
And I know we also have 6 or 7 applicants already for this position. So there's also the concern that we might lose those applicants if things don't come together quickly.
You know, and we've offered to help with the onboarding process, but eventually it's Jake's decision and the board's decision about who they hire. We can help, but we certainly don't want to dictate in those instances.
So we have a motion on the table and a second. Do you want to have more discussion or call
questions? Well, I was going to propose, and I was going to see what people thought. I think there might be 2 ways that we could move forward. One might be to go ahead and allocate these funds, but not name the agency that it would go to. Would that be a possibility?
So I think we should vote on the resolution as it is. Let's say no.
Yeah, I think that it's helpful to the Soil and Water District Board, which is the contractor here, if there's a contract presented to the board for us to say yes or no. And I think doing that sooner than later,
it makes sense to me at this point. Till now I've been, okay, you know, let's gather the information, let's see. But I think that we've reached the point where not moving forward is moving backwards. So I think it's better if there's something that would change between now and next time, or if there were another group that we would go to before the Soil and Water District, then yes. But Soil and Water District, I think, is our top choice.
I think that's
right. So why not offer the contract to your top choice? And then if you don't get that, then I think that the planning comes back to us with another proposal.
I take this as a huge compliment, but this is my list just for this year of what we have to do, you know. And you know, I don't think I made enough copies, but, you know, and the thing is, I could see short term, like we don't have the bandwidth, right? But long term, like 2026, like where we shine is actual implementation projects. Let me share that. And so what I see is like right now onboarding, we don't have bandwidth. I'm really, if it wasn't for the city contract, New York City's EP contract, it'd give me a lot more flexibility.
So can I just suggest that you bring those arguments to the board and not to this committee?
Well, we discussed it at board meetings.
We're going to discuss it at the next one, too.
But my point is that I really want to help the county. I really like working with Dennis. We've known each other 20 years. And in terms of implementation, that's where we shine. Like, you guys identify projects, and we could help you out. You know, we've done numerous, you know, the lower SOPIS, there's a log jam that needs to be removed. It's not our first rodeo. So we could definitely help collaborate and help check off boxes, get projects, beneficial projects done.
Any additional discussion? Yes, Merrick?
I just wanted to ask if what you just offered to assist with onboarding, if it's part of what's mentioned in the resolution or in the contract, so that is captured as a sincere, definite offer to assist with one of the areas that JP's mentioned often is of greatest concern, the onboarding.
The contract provides the necessary language to do collaboration between the planning department, Department of Environment, and the district on all phases of the contract, including the watershed coordinator position.
Great. Thank you. I think we're ready to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Is that it? Opposed?
Yeah. I'm very torn. Because, you know, I hear from the director of Soil and Water that not something that he wants to take on. I am not sure where their board stands on that question. Conversely, I have great respect for the folks and on the other side of this argument, you know, who have pointed out some great reasons why, you know, soil and water would really be the preferred place for this position to land. I'm wondering if we should wait until the negotiations are actually hammered out before we pass the resolution.
I think we already passed it.
So
is it a yes, no, or abstain?
I don't think I have a basis to abstain for this. So even though it pains me, and even though this is something that I've been advocating for years, I'm going to vote no because I feel like it's a problem if the agency charged with putting this in effect is not comfortable with the situation. I certainly hope that these contract negotiations go well and that everything is worked out because I think this is something that is desperately needed, and I certainly appreciate everyone's effort that is going into this. But I am just a little concerned, you know, about the dynamics with this. And I'm glad that my vote isn't going to hold things up terribly, but I just think the situation's a little concerning, and I wish all of you the best in getting this settled. And I think this is something that's desperate for you. So good luck.
Thank you.
Could I say one thing?
Yes.
Just in response? I appreciate that. But I think the best way to find out for sure how the Soil and Water District Board feels about this is to offer them the contract and offer us the contract.
And I can see
and if we could make a better contract by waiting longer, then I'd be for it. But this looks to me like the best that we're going to see from Ulster County. And I have my own position on it, but I'm only one member of the board.
Right.
Also, I feel like you're more of a yes because the director and the planning department will work out the details. We don't have to work out the details.
This is true. So this also comes under operations as well. So
it can't get involved in the
contract negotiation. So
you're with your vote?
I just hope things go smoothly. So thanks. I wish you all the best.
Final vote is?
I'm going to vote no.
Okay. Thank you.
Phone a friend. I'm sorry.
Resolution passes 5-1. Resolution number 178, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4 of 2025, a local law providing for the protection and restoration of the Esopus Creek, Rondell Creek, and Walkville River in Ulster County, and for the rights of the residents of Ulster County to clean water and a healthy and productive ecosystem, to be held on Tuesday, May 20th, 2025, at 7:15 p.m. I'll read a little bit of legislative intent from the proposed law. This is an expansion of Legislator Erner's Hudson River law that he was creating. I found a lot of other precedents around the world of protected rivers and people's right to clean water. So this is excerpted from the legislative intent. The Ulster County Legislature hereby finds that the Esopus Creek, Rondell Creek, and Walkill River are defining features of the county, feeder waterways of the Hudson River, and crucial environmental resources for the county and its residents. The legislature further finds that protection and restoration of the waterways is essential to provide for the health, welfare, prosperity, and benefit of county residents, currently and in the future, and to fulfill the county's stewardship obligations to its residents and natural resources. Is there any discussion or questions?
I would like to add it as a co-sponsor.
Thank you.
I don't think we've had any motions yet.
No.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Well,
I think it'll still be added. Green first. Okay. Any second?
I think that's my question.
I'll second for the purposes of discussion.
Discussion, great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought we were arguing discussion.
Almost. Okay, now we are.
Who needed a second?
Okay, thanks. So I guess I have some questions regarding definition of terms, such as, like, protection and restoration. I mean, when we talk about wanting to restore these waterways to how they were when, I mean, before Europeans came to this continent, or how they were in, you know, before the Industrial Revolution. I'm just not quite sure, you know, what we're restoring these to. And also protection. I mean, I guess my concerns come down to definition of terms, and then also, you know, how we are going to enforce some of this stuff. I mean, first of all, I want to say, wow, this is a lot of information, and I think you've made great strides after how it was presented with the Hudson River, the similar bill that Legislator Erner presented. So I think that there's been an enormous amount of work, and I guess my question is, you know, to the author. How do you see this, the restoration aspect of it working out?
I think because of the New York State Constitution language that has language about our right to clean water and air, there's still ambiguity in what protection is and what kind of enforcement. That's why we wrote a robust enforcement section about the many agencies that can get involved. I think that the timing is also very nice that the watershed coordinator would be hired around the time this law comes into effect.
Because
it's the three primary waterways of Ulster County. I think this has more teeth than the Hudson River one also, because it's within our county and not at the edge of our county. Deputy Executive Lavelle?
I can support the intent, but I have questions similar to those of Legislator Stewart. I would like us to think about not setting a public hearing yet and having some discussions here. I would like legislative counsel, both majority and minority counsel, to take a look at this, and potentially also the county attorney, because when you beef up enforcement, then you take on these responsibilities. I think we have the potential to the county in the situation of claiming management of a system that is much bigger than we've ever taken on. And the financial impact could be much greater than the $300 to advertise the public hearing. So I'd like to have some hard look, and maybe it's through the executive's office and the Department of Environment, on what a reasonable scope of claims under this law might be, say in the first year, the first 3 years, and the first 5 years. There's also written in here the precautionary principle as a part of a law, and I advocate very frequently on the precautionary principle, which is, you know, essentially a do no harm principle. Assume that you need to show the absence of harm before you take on some big activity. However, to write it into the law basically then may put us under an obligation to cover all kinds of anticipated and unanticipated impacts. And I'm not sure how many places write it into law, including the ones that are cited in the law as analogies in other states. So, and in other countries around the world. I'm a big fan of New Zealand, which is cited in the law as an example. I'm not sure that New Zealand, what its size is comparable to Ulster County, but I think they have a much bigger government and budget than we do for all of New Zealand, than we do for Ulster County. So exercising the precautionary principle in terms of passing or moving forward on this law, I'd like to look at it more broadly and with a more with a broader group of stakeholders weighing in on it.
Yes.
Not out of an effort to hold it back, but out of an effort to say, if we're going to do this, can we do it well and avoid those potential pitfalls that I think that I feel concerned about because of the way we're taking on this management role under how I read this.
That's what I like about the depth of the law. It's like I think you just said it perfectly. We've never handled a system this big. There's so many parts that make it a full ecosystem. Actually, Deputy Executive LaValle is next.
Well, I was just going to say there's a lot of references to the Department of Planning, so I was very curious to they would say that's a perfect tie-in.
So this the proposed law has a lot of similarities to the prior the Hudson River law, this local law of 2022, and the county attorney did offer an opinion on that law, and they've reviewed that opinion, and much of what was caused for concerns for the attorney remains in the new version. And so from the executive's office, we have a tremendous amount of concerns regarding the fact that this law would not substantially increase a citizen's right to bring a suit under rights of under the Green Amendment. However, it would increase and, you know, frankly, encourages suits against the county on behalf of a waterway or by a citizen. And the standards are for any type of degradation from a point source or a non-point source. So we've taken the standards that are in the national, through the Clean Water Act in NPDES, which are delegated to the state through the SPEDES program, where any point source discharge, any municipal wastewater treatment, point source discharge to a waterway that has to meet certain standards from the DEC, for example, could then be analyzed under this as far as what could be, I think the language here is lowering of water quality, and then be put on the county as far as having to regulate, mitigate, enforce, and analyze any of those impacts to a waterway. So what the county attorney said with the 2022 law was that it doesn't increase the rights of a citizen to make a claim for a waterway or on behalf of a natural resource, but it does incredibly increase, frankly, the role of the county and then being the recipient of those lawsuits and then also trying to regulate any of those point source or non-point source things. So now we're talking about, a municipal stormwater program. Someone could say that that's, impairing something, and we would have to, sue the municipality on behalf of that. Or, ag practices, any of those uses, non-point source or point source, would then fall under this legislation. And it puts Dennis in charge of enforcement.
Uh-huh. So. Is that good? Yeah, I think you need to understand the scale of what you're asking a department that doesn't have a regulatory function now to do, with no standards in which to do it. And I just want you to go back to the conversation you just had with respect to leachate from landfills or leachate from and their disposal and sewage treatment plants. Assuming those the sewage treatment plants discharge into a water body that's now subject to this law, and we've done nothing to essentially change how those discharges are made. So instead of complaining to DEC to develop those regulations, you're now complaining against your own local law. And those things, I think, are really critical to think about. And I also want you to think about that these SPEDES permits come up for review on a regular basis. Those SPEDES permits are then issued, either regularly reviewed or issued by the Department of Environmental Conservation. They add additional requirements to those feed instruments on a regular basis, whether they be phosphorus, PFOAs, et cetera. Now you're going to say to the planning department, which has no expertise in this whatsoever, to essentially review those Sweeties permits and make sure that they're not degrading or changing those things that are currently within the statute. And that's only on major actions. I also want you to think about you're going to have to review every local land use decision that requires a state permit or a permit from you in terms of whether it affects water quality in a way that is defined in the state constitution, right? I don't know how to do that. I don't even know how to approach that. And it's clear since the Green Amendment has been written that neither does the Department of Environmental Conservation, which has all of this expertise associated with these kinds of things. The sentiment you may support and like, but the idea of how a county, given the limited staff and given the magnitude of the actions which would be subject or could be subject to suit relative to that, is not something that you should go down a road without understanding the full regulatory implications of what you're talking about. You're literally building an entity that essentially has to have the regulatory backbone and expertise in order to exercise what you're asking us to do. And there's no standards in which to do it. That's the thing that really scares me, because the case law here suggests that even though there may be regulatory processes here, the thought that you're going to shut somebody down because they're doing this, which is what one of the case laws was, essentially that there was continued violation and the Department of Environmental Conservation essentially was writing consent orders. And the suit was that the consent, it was on a landfill, by the way. And the consent order, the decision was by the judge was that the Green Amendment applied. And they needed to find a way to essentially make that, to change the way that the department's regulations were applied with respect to this landfill. I don't know how to do that. It frightens me to think about the amount of regulatory oversight that would have to be exercised under the law. And if you didn't do it, somebody could sue the county because you didn't.
Oh, did you bring up the new wetlands laws that the state's trying to wrap its head around?
It's
a slippery slope. And then if you get a stormwater permit, there's a Sweeties permit associated with that if you disturb more than 1 acre. You go on and on.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, these were some of my concerns. I remember the process and the conversation and the outcome of the earlier Rights of River initiative. And I'm wondering what is different about this, because we heard from the county attorney and ultimately that did not move forward. And so I'm trying to understand what work was done to address those previous concerns.
I just wrote all of those concerns to start addressing them. And actually, this was just finalized last Wednesday, and I wanted to wait. I wanted you all to see it and give feedback. The biggest concern was motorized boats on the Hudson and petroleum. And all of these aren't really navigable rivers, except the lower part of the Rondeau. So the biggest change for me was addressing the concern of making it waterways within our county instead of the Hudson, which isn't really within our county. It's on the edge. But I definitely have to address what just came up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I think if you're open to a postponement, and maybe that would even be in consideration of withdrawal and reframing, I think we should be talking about what productive role we can play. And I just don't want to supplant the New York State system, or try to, with our little piece of it, which is, I think, the Director Doyle has articulated perfectly. So maybe what we should be doing is either thinking about the rights of the river and how we want to articulate it, that's a good thing to do, or we're thinking about our role as a county entity. We already have planning and environment that will participate when landowners have issues about these things, but they are not obligated. They're not obligated to be the authority, and so they don't have to have the staff for that. So maybe there's a
different role that we can articulate for ourselves than this one that is purely regulatory.
Yeah. Thank you.
Director Doyle?
I never want to think out loud, but I do it too long.
Don't do it enough.
You've earned the right.
You know, the fact that the major regulatory agencies at the state level have not moved in the direction to essentially recognize the Green Amendment and what it says seems to be an opportunity to tell them they should. And perhaps that's the direction that you start to think about. Similar to what you just did with respect to the leachate question, you know, urging somebody to essentially get their act together and say, if this amendment holds and we now have these decisions out there by some of the judges, I think there's two, as I recall, then perhaps what we end up doing is you say, these amendments should be recognized in some way, shape, or form within the regulatory structure of New York State. That, to me, would be one of the things that you can think about. They may come back and tell you we already do, and that may be fine, but at least, you know, if you're looking for a how to essentially influence the ability to essentially articulate what's in the Green Amendment, then I think that there could be some responsibility back to these major regulatory agencies. And the water quality agencies, in my mind, are the big ones of the Department of Health with respect to the quality of drinking water, which also is, if you're entitled to clean water, it should be the water you drink. And then the second piece is on the Department of Environmental Conservation. There may be other players here, but that would be something that I think out loud and be sorry for it tomorrow, but that was my outline thinking.
Thank you. Representative Wall.
I think it's well intended, but based on what I'm hearing here, it sounds like it's like a duplication of this other statute that would open the county up to liabilities that, or even, you know, enforcement. We don't have the capability of enforcement, stuff like that. So, just wanted to shout out.
So, anyone else? I would recommend a postponement.
I make a motion. You're making the motion?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
All those in favor of postponing?
Aye.
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 Mm-hmm.
Opposed? Abstain? Resolution passes. I mean, it's postponed unanimously. And the resolution number 470, the polystyrene and thermoform plastic. I would also recommend that we postpone.
I make a motion that we postpone for 1 month.
And that was Nolan, Ray Donaldson. Yeah, I got it. All those in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Thank you. Old business. Climate Smart Committee.
Very briefly, we've kind of made an informal agreement to had Climate Solutions as an agenda item with the Environmental Management Council, and I would I don't think we should do away with the Climate Smart Committee. I think their role should be one of creating powerful education and also making actual recommendations, which is part of their mission. The problem is we need to fill vacancies. And quite frankly, I was the only one at the last meeting. So
EMC?
With the Climate Smart Committee. But I do think it's working well to have climate be an agenda item that people can share, and also it helps to bring the work that we are doing to the EMC, and that addresses the meeting fatigue of them having to go to the EMC meeting and then go to another climate smart meeting.
That's great.
So it's just an informal, but Kristen Shara, who's now chairing the EMC, is completely open to that. And they're also doing really good work, too. I believe we're going to be hosting a statewide EMC coming out.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any other old business? New business? I have a motion for adjournment.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
I
vote
no.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.